Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Madam White through to the roll. As always, you can't get enough. It's the first round of the US Masters as well. I know he's got an eye on that, but he'll be fully focused on the Breakfast Club. Whitey, good morning.
I might be fully focused.
Fully focused.
But, I'm fully focused on Augusta at the moment.
No, you're not.
It's been a very encouraging start to the proceedings. Almost got the triple.
What do you mean? What is the triple? Never heard of a triple.
Essendon nearly won. Patrick Reed and Mark Leishman are doing particularly well.
Well, Leishman's fallen off the
base. And, no, he'll be right.
He's fallen off the base.
He'll be all right. And then six mils in the gauge, which is just perfect for the Tiff Tough. Would have liked that a few days ago, but that'll really give it some bounce and some spring and some real rejuvenation.
I'm concerned about the Tiff Tough.
Oh, please.
I'm concerned about the take-up of the Tiff Tough.
Anyway.
I just don't want it to be a disaster for you. I don't know if the kids can handle it.
We'll be fine.
I just don't know if they can. I'm not quite sure. Well, the Bombers didn't win because that's what happens these days. And Adam Romanakis, when he was playing, they used to win all the time because he was the difference. They could use a few Adam Romanakis's today or this week. Turn your phone off, Romo. Good morning to you.
Good morning. They're just texting me to come down next week.
Is that Ben Rutten?
A little bit of composure late in the game they needed, so he just said, look, you know, can you come and help out for the next month?
Would have been helpful.
I've politely declined, so...
What?
I can't let my basketball team down on a Wednesday night, simple as that. I can't do both. It's too much.
What were we talking about yesterday when we got his basketball?
We were talking about the... It's a question to ask, Rama, because Daniel really couldn't come up with anything.
Mm. Sorry.
What is your greatest feat that you've ever done, a physical thing? So it might be 25 possessions and 3 goals, or it might be 42 points in Wednesday night basketball at 10:50. But what would be your number one thing that you've ever done where you look back and go, gee, I'm proud of myself?
I shot 72 points in a school game for basketball.
What?
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Now we're talking.
Real Kobe areas. Yeah. Are you Kobe?
No, but that was just what I did.
I never ran a Bryant.
And football, what did I do football-wise? I kicked 14 in a game in under 12s, I think. So a couple of little of those feats. I'm sure half would have something like that in the back pocket somewhere.
Nothing quite. Well, that can't junior footy. That doesn't count.
What about as an adult?
It doesn't count.
Physical feat as an adult.
Exactly. Have a think about it.
Mm.
Have a think about it. Because I'm going to go.
A moment where you go, you know what? I'm really proud of myself. I'm chuffed. That's all.
Let me think.
I'll
think about that one.
Well, Daniel and Oakley's got on the line early doors. He's got his own physical feat that he would like to illuminate to our world. Hello, Daniel. Oh. What's happened there?
His physical feat's just actually good. Being able to...
Stay on the line.
He's down the line.
Stay on the line. Well, he's hung up, so we're not sure what's happened there with Daniel, but we'll see how he goes. Bombers going out to plus 29.5 at the line was a gift from Quinny. Thank you very much, off someone says off the SMS. Not to be for the Bombers last night, boys. Let's touch on that while we're here and see if Daniel wants to come back on the line. He's welcome to. 1-300-652-927. Not quite good enough, the Bombers last night. Went down by just a couple of points, inside a goal, 3 points. 83-80 in the end for the Swans. 11-17, and they shot themselves in the foot a little bit, our friends in the red and white, to the Bombers 12-8-80. What did you make of the game, Romanakis?
It was a brilliant game of football. Both teams. Essendon obviously jumped them at the start and were looking really good. And then Sydney clawed their way back, and credit where credit's due. They were able to hang in there. So I think both teams will walk away satisfied. Obviously, Sydney a lot more. But again, from where Essendon were against Port Adelaide a couple of weeks ago to where they are now on the back of Sydney. Now, the latter's going to say 1-3, but I think... Bombers supporters will be happy, and I think Sydney supporters will be over the moon. A four love start for a young team. They've effectively now, what are they going to win? 8 more games out of 18 to play finals, Whitey.
And they've got the Giants and the Suns in the next 2 weeks.
So the last time they went 4-0 at the start of season?
Oh, that'd be a long time ago.
2012 it was. Do you know what happened that year?
Premiership. They beat Hawthorn the premiership. Yeah.
They won a premiership.
Yep.
Yeah, the previous time was 1909, I think.
Mm.
So that hasn't happened too many times in this Sydney/South Melbourne football club's history.
They look well balanced now, Sydney, I think, across the field. In the past, Sydney have needed a brilliant performance by somebody, whether it's a Josh Kennedy in the midfield, Luke Parker in the midfield, a Rampy obviously behind a football, or even a Franklin four. But now they just seem, the balance seems a lot better. They're getting really good performances out of their younger players, and you exclude Goulden and Campbell and Logan McDonald, their first year, but you're getting really good performances out of, obviously, Jake Lloyd, who's a multiple best and fairest winner out there. McInerney, Callum Mills going into the midfield now. Ollie Florent is another one. So they're not just relying on those big star names to drag them across the line. The performance and the effort is a lot more even from the Swans. And yeah, I think they're a good team. I think we're going to revisit our top eight, I think, on Monday. So
oh,
yeah. After four rounds?
Oh, yeah, we did say
after
we did
four
that.
Rounds, yeah. We're going to revisit.
We might have some selection changes there. Might be a bit of match committee activity going on there, yeah. Strengths and weaknesses.
So they look, particularly if...
Might be getting a couple of teams in front of the group. Circle type situation.
Particularly if Franklin obviously can now stay fit for the remainder of the season. It's just another weapon. And look, Buddy's not going to be the best player in the competition, but if he's going to be able to kick two or three goals a game, that's unbelievably dangerous.
Yeah, I think with Sydney last night, for me, that's the worst game they've played of their four wins. But they won the game. Mm. You know, they gave up a six-goal sequence to Essendon in that second quarter, where Essendon played extremely well. But Sydney were able to balance up, and as half touched on before, I think the scoring shots made things perhaps a little bit closer than what it needed to be. But, you know, I think you're right, Raman. They're very even. I mean, Josh Kennedy didn't dominate last night by any stretch of the imagination. Parker probably did, but they got contributions from a number of different players. That's their key, is their evenness. Mm. And we talked about this during the week with Sydney, is that it's interesting that the talk is about the young guns. The talk isn't about Parker, Kennedy, Franklin, Rampy, Heaney, who got injured last night. So I think that's the interesting part, is that it's not a reliance on the senior core doing really well and the kids just doing a little bit. They're doing more than a little bit.
Well, plus 24 in clearances last night.
It's backing.
That's where the game, at the SCG, that first possession, then territory on a smaller ground, it's a big win.
And that has been Essendon's issue over the first month at times. And I think you've got to give Essendon credit that despite that differential, they were still competitive in the match. And I think Essendon fans out there, what they want to see from Essendon is competitiveness. Mm. They want to see them being able to match it with teams that are good with contested ball. And at times they did that last night. But when they looked like they were beaten, they came back. These are all the sort of, you know, signs of resilience in a young group that I think the fans want to see, because there hasn't been much of it over the last... Yeah. Let's be honest, 20 years.
And you talk about that competitiveness. So tackles Essendon...
78.
Yep, plus 24. And their pressure rating was enormous throughout the whole game. So.
They had 36 tackles in the last quarter, Essendon. 36, yep. So they had 78 for the game.
So
36
that's
of them.
That's really good.
But that's ridiculous.
But that's what I'm getting at. If you're an Essendon supporter watching the game last night, you walk away going, yep, they had a go. They had a crack. Yep. That last quarter, they easily could have gone... Ooh, this is a little bit tricky here, a little bit difficult, but they kept going and they'll right there to the last moment. That, you know, the Hickey boundary throw in right on Sydney's 50, where he took the ball out of the ruck, grabbed it. It could have easily been incorrect disposal.
It could have been. The ball, it should have been.
It wasn't incorrect disposal. Didn't dispose of it. He got tackled. And it's no longer prior opportunity.
He tried to handball.
But it's prior opportunity when you... No, hang on a sec.
It's not.
Hang on a sec. Hang on a sec.
It's not.
Slow down.
It's prior opportunity when you take it out of the ruck and then run 10 metres and get tackled.
Come on, Adam.
And stood in dispose of the ball.
Sounds like a propaganda man to me. That sounds like propaganda.
There was a one earlier in the goal square at the Essendon end that wasn't a free kick, because he grabbed it and was immediately tackled.
Yep.
The second one, he may as well have taken a bounce.
Sounds like
he'd run his full quota.
Sounds like someone who was wearing a duffel coat. The Big Dog is, speaking of... Big Dog, I think, might have been wearing a duffel coat last night watching that game. Good morning, Big Dog.
Morning, mate.
Oh, don't be like that, Dog.
Oh, I don't know how Rama can sit there and say Essendon fans would be happy. I am queuing my breakfast up.
Well, don't do that.
I not only did I have a couple of dollars on the Bombers to win under 39 points, but after being 6 goals in front, and I spoke to you, Rama, after round one against Hawthorn, after the second quarter, surely they've got to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you know, they kick goal after goal after goal. Well, let's change things up here. That's not rocket science.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
Well, that is a fair point. But Essendon did that. Price. So Essendon kicked 6 in a row and Sydney kicked 6 in a row. At the SCG, if both teams are a team, you can score, as you know, half there pretty quickly. So, but that is a small concern. It's sort of, you know, that's the second time that it's happened now. Obviously, we're going to erase Port Adelaide because that wasn't a great game at all by the club. But yeah, I agree with you, Dog, there. It's something that Ben and his coaching staff need to look at if that happens and why that happens, one. Why are they getting scored on so easily? But when it gets to 3 goals in a row, something has to change at the centre bounce.
How much of it... So they got 25 points up when Darcy Parrish kicked that goal from the boundary. How much of it is a young group getting excited at how surprisingly well they're playing and they go away from what they were doing? And how much of it is just a good team saying, oh, hang on, we can't let this happen any longer?
I think that's the maturity in the leadership of the group.
See, that's what I'm thinking, is that there's two parts to it. One, that they allowed, they got 25 in front and they allowed the opposition back into the game. So the question for me is how that happened, because to me it seemed like, even with their smiles on their faces, they thought, this is really good. And the same thing happened against Hawthorn. I think everyone just got a bit excited and stopped concentrating. But then, so that's a cross. But the tick is that, as it looked like Sydney were going to jump away in the last quarter, Essendon didn't allow them to. They did fight back. So I think that was... So there was a cross, but then there was a tick. Mm. I think it was a very positive night for the Essendon Football Club.
One thing that I noticed...
Stay strong, Dog.
...with Sydney and the difference, particularly in the second half, Sydney were getting deeper entries inside their forward 50. Essendon's were all shallow. They were very shallow entries in, and the ball was coming out quite quickly. There was a period of time, I think, in the third quarter where they just didn't look like scoring. The game was played basically from Essendon's 50 all the way to Sydney's goal line. So, but, you know, I think Dog's a little bit upset because his hip pocket's a little bit lighter.
Well,
but
yeah, it can happen.
But, I walk away from that game going, yep, tick, even though they lost.
I agree. I think so.
I look at the younger players again. You know, Darcy Parrish was good. Nick Cox, obviously, is going to be a really good player.
Nick Cox was 30-1 for the Rising Star just 24 hours ago. I don't think he's going to be that for much longer.
Nick Hine looks like a really good pickup from St Kilda with his run and dash out of the fence. McGrath looks like he's going to be a bona fide midfielder, but his hands in close particularly are really good.
The thing that surprised me last night was Archie Perkins, because, you know, we think of Archie Perkins more as a flashy sort of cream on top of the cake. He won a couple of really hard balls and under pressure stood up in a tackle and got a disposal away. There was a few things that...
And it's game two for him.
That's right. So I was quite surprised by that.
1-300-652-927. This is a counselling session for Bomber fans. You are welcome to speak to Adam and Adam about your feelings this morning. Let us know. 1-300-652-927.
We gave Sydney enough praise. Enough praise for them.
Hey, the Chad. How good's the Chad? Love the Chad.
Yeah. So you still prefer Warner over Golden?
Yep. Errol's good too, don't get me wrong, but I'm taking the Chad.
The one big change for the Swans is Mills going from halfback to the midfield now.
Yep.
And he looks really, really comfortable in there. He looks really composed with ball in hand. Because it's hard going from halfback where you've got probably a bit more space and time to dispose of the football. Whereas you go into the midfield and you've got people constantly around you, particularly at contest, and the good players can create time. Scott Pendlebury is the best example of that. But Mills looks like when he gets the ball in hand, it just stops and he can give the best option, whether it's by hand or foot. So there's no doubt. I always thought Heaney would be the one to go in there and play more full-time mid, but obviously Heaney breaks his hand last night. But Heaney looks like he's going to play more half forward, whereas Mills looks like he's going to play regular midfield.
I think it's the old chestnut of where is he going to be most damaging? Mm. If he, because Heaney's a scoreboard hitter.
Yeah, he, yeah.
You don't want to take him away from the areas that he can impact scoreboard. Mm. I know he gets the footy a bit if he played in the mid. He could be a star mid, I reckon.
Yeah.
But he hits the scoreboard. He's a natural.
Could he be a star forward when Franklin retires? Could he be that 80 goal kicker playing out of the square, almost a traditional old sort of stay-at-home forward? Or is he always going to be pushed a bit higher?
I think that he needs to be a bit higher. He probably could, you know, as a one-out forward, and particularly the way the game's evolving.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, I think he'd be tough to match up on.
Yeah.
You look at Sydney's midfield moving into the future, Mills, Warner, Rowbottom, and he hasn't played yet because he's been injured, and he was very good last year. They're set up nicely.
And they've got money in the cap. They might need to pay a bit more to the kids than what they anticipated, but they'll
the Chad signed on for a bit longer yesterday.
There are a couple that signed up, yeah.
And Blakey and somebody else as well. Yep. As a Hawks supporter, I've never felt sorry for an Essendon supporter, but a Big Dog, I just want to give you a big hug. It will be okay, Dog, says the Baker.
Big Dog's feeling about the same as Bryson DeChambeau at the moment. I've just
What's
seen
Bryson done?
DeChambeau walk off the ninth hole at four over, and it looked like he needed a counselling session. He was a tortured soul. As he walked off nine.
But he was swinging really hard.
He was going to smash the course to smithereens again in his four over. So before we get to some text messages and some calls, just to get a bit of a snapshot as to what's going on, the scores are very high. And what I mean very high, we're getting lots of scores over par. Mark Leishman hit the ground running. He was four under through six holes, an outright leader. And then he had three consecutive bogeys around the turn, 9, 10, and 11. He's balanced up a little bit now. So he's one under to be in a tie for 8 through 13. He's still got a par 5 to go. But Harmon and Matsuyama are your leaders at 3 under in the clubhouse. Zalatoris is at 2 under, along with Webb Simpson and Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed bogeyed the last hole. Justin Rose also at 2 under.
He's about to be 3 under. He's put one to 3 feet on 12.
But outside of that, you know, Leishman was said 1 under, Kim 1 under, Im 1 under, Fitzpatrick 1 under, and then we're into even par at a tie for 12th. So it's hard and fast, as you said, Half. So it's the greens that seem to be giving them a lot of problems. The wind doesn't seem to be too much of an issue. But we're seeing some really high scores from some of the key players, which
That's
is
good.
Quite surprising.
That is good. Call in Bryson if you're feeling a bit blue. 1-300-652-927. We're helping everyone this morning on the
Breakfast Club. Speak to Uncle Rammer.
Well, Rammer will help you through.
Let's have a look at some of these high scores just for the big name players. Westwood, bit of an issue, plus 6. Day, plus 5.
Wasn't he one of our players?
Why is that an issue?
Because we had him as a value chance.
Yeah, we or you?
The family.
Oh, right, okay. I need clarity.
Day plus 5 finished. DeChambeau mentioned plus 4 through 9. Who else? McIlroy plus 4 finished.
Sergio.
Hit his dad in the crowd at one point.
He did.
Sergio plus 4 finished.
That's another one of the family's
solutions. Justin Thomas plus 3 through 8.
It's going to be tough to win from there.
He could still do it.
He could do it.
Cam Smith plus 2 through 7. Adam Scott plus 2 through 9. Cantlay plus 2 through 9. And then we're Dustin Johnson plus 2 finished. Koepka plus 2 finished. Bubba Watson plus 2 finished. So, yeah, a lot of the good big name players are over par. And then we're sort of, you know, plus ones. You've got Morikawa, Mickelson, Hatton. That's Spieth even through 7. So that's a bit of a snapshot of what's going on, but you kind of go bottom up because of so many of the big name players bombing on round one.
Now, Danny's in Oakley. He's got a personal feed he needs to illuminate us with. Hello, Danny.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Going well, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I spoke to you guys about 3 weeks ago, I reckon. Might have been prior to round one, the Dono one.
Yes.
And I believe you guys done some research and haven't been able to find someone that's beaten 100 goals in 9 games.
Well, that is true. That is true, Danny. We are yet to find someone who's beaten the 9-game 100. Are you putting up someone for offer, or are you just enjoying the fact that you're still it?
Well, it is my 50th birthday tomorrow, so I thought I'd... I promised you the boys that I'll be on this morning, so I thought I'd just confirm in case... any of the smart-asses tomorrow night want to say that it's been beaten, but it officially hasn't been beaten.
Well, we have done some forensic analysis on this, Danny. Little Joey out the back has been knee-deep in this for weeks. He's yet to be able to find someone who's beaten the 100-goal mark within 9 games. So you are king of the castle. It's official, and happy birthday for tomorrow. Where's the party?
It's in Caulfield, the old Rosstown Hotel. I'm trying to get all of my 18 coaches there, but I can only manage to get about a dozen at the moment.
How come there's 18 coaches? What'd you do?
I played at 18 different clubs. more clubs than Greg Norman. But did play one AFL reserves game for North back in the days when it was the supplementary list.
Oh, yes.
Johnny Law was the coach.
Johnny Law.
And I remember... It might have been Schimmelbusch was coach of the seniors. And it was at the G versus Melbourne. And I remember, who did I play on? Johnny Howard and Rod Grinter for a bit of a quarter.
Oh, so, stay away from Rod.
Daddy, how many goals over the whole career?
1693.
1693.
Just couldn't get it to 2000?
No, I couldn't, but... if I had a kick straighter, I might have. I'd probably kicked about 800 behind as well.
I got you on when you first started. I heard about you, Danny. I backed you to kick 1700, so I'm pretty disappointed about that. 7 short.
I'm still in pretty good nick. I might chuck on the boots one more time and maybe have a run down at Oakley Districts or St Kilda City, maybe.
And, Daddy, what was your best season?
109.
16. Our best season, as in...
Most goals.
It was that year that I kicked the fastest 100, so that was 138.
Did you tape it off?
Yeah, he slowed down.
Got ahead of himself.
Twice I kicked 16 goals in this year.
That's some unbelievable self-promotion going on here, and I think it's fantastic. What's that?
It wasn't over great, strong footy of the Korean League, but it is not a bad effort if you've got 3 or 4 blokes hanging off you every time you go for the ball.
Danny, it's one of the great stories in the history of Australian sport, full stop, and it should be there should be a statue somewhere for you. Well done, mate. Enjoy your birthday tomorrow, and tell the boys you nailed it.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
And speaking of excellence, what about this man? Just leading the charge magnificently for the Australian women's cricket team. They are excellence personified. They made it 23 one-day international wins in a row the other day for the second game of the one-day series against New Zealand as part of the Rose Bowl. Matthew Mott is his name, and he's been good enough to join us ahead of the third and final one tomorrow. Good morning, Matty.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are very well, thank you. I reckon your world's pretty nice at the moment too. Gee, the girls are humming along magnificently. We saw the T20 series go really well. It was a strong series from both teams, but we... really did perform well there. But this one-day format seems to really suit us down to the ground.
Yeah, it does. I think we've obviously had a pretty good run for a while. But, even before that, we were a good cricket team. But I think, generally speaking, we can look back to probably 2017 where we just improved our consistency. I think we were a good side, but we talk about trying to become great. And I think that's something that we're still aspiring to do. We've still got a lot of areas we can improve on, but... generally speaking, there's a lot of depth at the moment. There's a lot of competition for spots, and the team's running quite nicely at the moment.
I was going to ask you how you keep the girls hungry and the team hungry for success and to be the best. I imagine the injection of new players probably helps that a little bit, and there's a few of those in the squad this time around. How do you do it?
Yeah, I think it's part of continued success is that you've got to keep looking for the next trends in the game, and we've done that. I think our selection panel, particularly for this tour, are looking ahead for the next World Cup, which is over here. Basically, this tour is a dress rehearsal a year out, and we've picked some young quicks, which we think can change up the game. And that Darcy Brown and Taylor Vlaminck have certainly come through. We've still got some talent on the bench that hasn't had a run. That at least they're absorbing the conditions. So. You're right. I think young players coming in always adds that little bit of competition for spots, and the older players in this group have been really good leaders for a long time. So that certainly helps as well.
I was talking about this on the program a couple of weeks ago, Matt. I saw that documentary Beyond the Boundary from your Ashes tour in England, and I was really fascinated in how you coach the girls, who win most of the time, but the way you continue to challenge them to be better, I think it's really interesting because the players clearly just want to improve all the time. You've got a good group to work with.
Oh, we've got a fantastic group to work with. But, it's taken a long time for us to get to this sweet spot. It hasn't all been, all been roses all the way along. But, we've learned a lot from our mistakes. I think where we are really good now is just our trust in each other and our candid honesty about where we were either very good and we'd like to acknowledge when we're good, but where we can improve. And I think, over time, that's taken a long time to develop. When I first sort of was in the group, our team meetings are very quiet and was very coach-directed. We've got one now in about 15 minutes and we'll debrief, get that last game. And to be honest, the players will do most of the talking and the review, and they'll be honest about their performance. So, they're not averse to throwing themselves under the bus where they made mistakes. And I think that's when you can get real growth in a group, and it encourages other players to admit where they've made their mistakes and where they can get better.
Because can it be a trap, that sort of the complacency because you win so much, to keep them not from being comfortable? Or with the particular group you've got, it's actually quite easy?
Yeah, I think we've learned some lessons. I talk about 2017. We went into that World Cup, and I think, just across the board, there was an assumption that we'd be in that final. And I think, history suggested we were probably going to be there or thereabouts, but we got a real kick in the backside in the semi-final. India came out and played an awesome game. Their captain destroyed us, basically, and we were like rabbits in the headlights. And I think that, we always talk about it as a crucible moment in our sort of last few years. That was the one where that hit us hard, and I don't think we've ever been complacent since then. And I think we've learned from that experience, and we haven't had a World Cup in this format since then. So there's still plenty driving this team forward. So, I don't think complacency is an issue at all.
Let's start with race number 6, the first leg of the quaddie. And there are 11 going around. And at the top of the market, Dino, and the top of the order, is Liquero for the Aldersons. John McNeil in the saddle, your mate, who's $1.90 in the early markets at tab.com.au for Cindy.
He is, and he's a promising horse, obviously. He's won 3 out of 4, so he's going great guns. But I really like a horse called Through Irish Eyes here, number 6. His first 3 runs, he showed talent every time, but he needed blinkers and a big track, and he got that combination at Sale and really showed his staying prowess there. And I think he's a very smart stayer in the making. I think these two will probably fight out this race tomorrow, and maybe the St. Ledger on Anzac Day. I think Liquero's the danger. He does go up 4 kilos for that win last start, but he's a very promising stayer and really put that race away well. Furioso's coming in on a light preparation, but we've seen this with Matt Kumani horses before. Thought he ran okay first up. And another one through a totally different preparation is 7 Silicon Valley, coming actually off a high weight win last start, but he looks as though he can really stay as well for the Mar Eustace stable. So I think that Through Irish Eyes and Liquero are the better chances, but I have all 4 running in the quaddie.
All right, so we've got 4 in the quaddie. $1.90 favourite, is it firming or easing, Quinny?
Firming, $2 into $1.90, heads the market at that quote. I dare say the best backed runner in the next 5 minutes will be the second elect, number 6, Through Irish Eyes. We've got Rumour, a $6.50 chance, and number 8, Olivia's Game, currently at $9.50. Dino, just taking a look at your early quaddie selections, you haven't got the second and third elects, Rumour and Olivia's Game, in the quaddie. Both of them come through that St. Ledger trial, with Olivia's Game seeming to improve every time she steps up in trip.
Yeah, it's the one I'm a little bit wary of, to be honest. I thought her run at Bendigo was quite good. Ruba was unlucky at Bendigo, got held up, and I don't know if that flattered the horse that really hit the line late. Olivia's Game's the one probably I'm a little bit nervous of.
All right, bit of a summary there for the first look at the quaddie, race number 6. Rami, you got one job. Stop looking at other stuff on your phone and give me the numbers, please, or give our listeners the numbers, please.
I'm ready.
Can,
I'm
for
always
the first
ready.
Look at the quaddie
always
tomorrow.
Listening.
I don't know. You looked off.
At odds, looking at what my little bets may be.
Look, focused elsewhere, which I was concerned about.
No, never.
If you get these wrong, I will come for you hard, mate.
6, 1, 5, and 7.
6, 1, 5, and 7 are the numbers for the first leg of the quaddie, the Galilee Series final over the 2,400 metres. The race number 7 is the second leg. It is the MRC Chairman's Club Handicap. $135,000 up for grabs. 2,400 again, so staying field, which means we know a few of these horses because they just keep running, as Dino was talking about before. And Lord Belvedere is one of those Mare Eustace horses that, well, it doesn't just keep running. It's second running from a spell, Dino, but his favourite in a very open market at $5 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, it is an open race, Daniel, and probably a little bit on weather watch, depending if we get a bit of rain tomorrow. I'm hoping we don't get too much because I think number 9, Skelm's got a good chance here. Look, the Mornington Cup, very hard race to assess because they went so slowly and it was just a dash home. And Skelm raced in restricted room, so did Lord Belvedere. They finished side by side. One seems to be big odds and one's favourite, and I don't think there's that much between them. And Skelm actually does drop 2 kilos for that run, courtesy of Will Price's claim. So just at the odds, I'm tipping Skelm from Lord Belvedere. Others to consider: Mohican Heights won on the same day, on Mornington Cup Day, in a different race over 2,000 metres. Won quite well, and he drops 3.5 kilos for that run. And out of the same race was number 6, Norway, who I think ran quite well. Only second run for Peter Moody, and he does drop 5.5 kilos. He'll be up on the speed. Gets a senior rider, and Jai McNeil might be next best. But, yeah, as you said, they're a bit of the usual suspects here. But I thought Skelm had a good each-way chance.
Skelm, a good each-way chance. What are those each-way numbers for us, Quinny?
Drum roll, please, Daniel.
Oh, hang on. Stand by. I've got something. Go.
Currently $18.
Oh, hey! $18. Boy.
So we like
bit
to
of a
see.
Spoiler $18. Alert for another segment later.
Oh, okay, righto. Stand by. Righto, so $18 for his number 1 selection. Is there any support for it in the market, Quinny?
Yeah, there has been a little bit of money at the 18 and 480, but no doubt that will continue in the coming minutes. The best backed runner is the favourite, Lord Belvedere, who's been 550 into 5, and also money around for stablemate to one of 3 other runners in the race, Yonkers, with Chris Waller having 4 in the team. Dino, of the 4 Waller runners, you've got 2 of them in the quaddy. What do you make of the 2 we don't have in Lord Mayor and De Beers?
Lord Mayor ran quite well last start. He's got a chance. He doesn't win out of turn, but that's the theme of the race a bit. And Yonkers, I think for him to win at this sort of trip, he needs a very slowly run race, and that's when he goes his best. I'd be thinking this might be run a little bit stronger than the Mornington Cup, and that's why I'm a little bit against him.
All right, that's the assessment of race number 7, the second leg of the quaddy. We've got some value in our numbers there, Rammer, which are, of course,
9, 1, 8, and 6.
9, 1, 8, and 6. Now, Dino had a $20 winner on Wednesday, so $18 is right in his wheelhouse right about now. So that's okay. We are happy about that. More on that shortly for the Rammer's Ruffy, possibly. Race number 8, the third leg of the quaddy, 2,000 metres, Dino. It's a benchmark 84 affair. And we have 11 going around. Grand Promenade is favourite, Jai McNeil. Mare and Eustace, second up after a second on resumption at Mornington behind Mohican Heights. Is that good form for this?
Well, I'm giving Mohican Heights a very good chance in the race prior. So, yes, I think it is good form, and I'm a fan of Grand Promenade. Whether he needs 2,400 metres now, he's a real genuine stayer, but he's one of the chances. I like Wycliffe here. I think he ran very well at Mornington. He's only had the 2 runs back, and he's only had 3 runs for the Danny O'Brien stable. But I think he's got a great chance here to beat Grand Promenade. Just peaked on his run at Mornington. He'll be that bit fitter. 6 Miyake. He's got a naught next to his name first up at Mornington, but it was a lot better run than that would suggest. Drops in weight. And 7 Vegas Knight, who looks the leader. He's getting fitter. I thought he ran well at Sandown, and he's a winner over 2,000 metres here at Caulfield, next best. But I think Wycliffe's ready to run really well.
Righto, Quinny. I actually missed that. They're both equal favourites, Wycliffe and Grand Promenade, at $4. Where's the support going at the moment?
Of the duo, Grand Promenade has been the best back. There's also been money for number 5, Independent Road, a $5 third elect, Dino Independent Road, who is in the Ramaruffi Hall of Fame, beat home Vegas Knight last start at Sandown. We've got Vegas Knight in the quaddy. What's the concern with Independent Road, and where do you see the form reversal from last start between those two?
I just think Independent Road's absolute sweet spot's about 1,700-1,800 metres, and I just think 2,000 metres, yeah, he's run a couple of fourths, and he's an honest horse, so he runs well. But I think we're getting right to the back end of his best distance range, so I'm just taking him on a bit tomorrow.
Righto, take him on. You're entitled to do that. You find enough winners, you can do that. Rammer, what are the numbers, please, for the third leg of the quaddie?
8, 2, 6, 7.
Race number 9 is the next leg of the quaddie. It's the last leg of the quaddie. It's over 1,600 metres. An open affair, Dino. And there are 11 going around. Another shortish price favourite, number 5, Platoon, is coming back and doing some great things after a second last time out. $2.30. Is that a bit short?
It is a little bit short, Daniel. He's running really well. He's having a long preparation. He ran in a Perth Cup and then came back, won a sprint race, and he's had the 3 runs in Melbourne. It's going very well. I think he's got a great chance. It's a race of horses that don't win out of turn, so I want to have a few of these running for us. And I'm going to go with Planciel. I think the blinkers going back on is important here, number 7. He's won 4 of 10 at the distance. He's won 4, I think, at Caulfield. And first up was a bit of a non-event for him. It was a slowly run race in the dash home. He had no chance. So thinking he can improve, Platoon can win. I think Guizzo, who's won 4 of 13 at Caulfield, and 1600's absolutely his sweet spot, where he's been running over 1400, so he's ready to do something. El Galil, I don't want to leave him out first up. He's probably better at 2000 metres, but he has got a good winning profile. And Brimham Rocks ran a really good race first up last time in, and he's had a couple of jump outs, ready to go first up, might have a little chance, but I thought it was a tricky end of the program, but Planciel's got as good a hope as any in it, especially if the rain comes through the day.
All right, so a bit to talk about there, Quinny. What's the market saying? Where's the money going?
Platoon, a 230 favourite, has been solid at that quote. High Stranger, a 480 second elect. Planciel, 6. And Guizzo, one of the runners that Dino mentioned there, $34 and $7 the place. Dino, a couple of questions. You've left out the second elect, High Stranger, who was 5th in the Golden Mile after winning the Echuca Cup. And just at the odds, Guizzo, $7 the place. Do you like that on a similar basis to Plinciel, the winner, the similar quote, or you're more bullish about Plinciel winning than Guizzo running into the money?
That's a tricky one. Jeez, you've crossed the border and you've just come alike, Quinny. I think Guizzo's a good place bet. That's a terrific place bet. You've got 3 chances at that sort of money, yeah. And with High Stranger, he has got a chance. He ran well in the Golden Mile on his home track. I think 1600's absolutely as far as he wants. He's won, I think, at the trip at Caulfield as a 3-year-old, but it's as far as he wants. And there's some pretty old, seasoned hard heads in this race. He'll run a good race, but couldn't put them all in.
Can't put them all in, Rammer. You can only put 5 in on this occasion. What are those 5 numbers, please?
7, 5, 8, 1, 2.
Now, you're not going to believe this. There's been some feedback from some of our listeners that they've missed some of the numbers. This one says, Half, can you please read the quaddie numbers again? I've just had to head over to the Pine Straw to look for Justin Thomas's wayward tee shot. So we've got people Justin listening Thomas. From Augusta, which is fantastic, although they're not supposed to have phones on course there in Augusta because they get sent off the property very quickly if you noticed.
Did you have that happen in 2005, Daniel?
Well, funny you mentioned, I was there in 2005, Dino. You may not be aware of that. I did have my phone in my pocket at one stage and I saw someone getting escorted from the premises and I thought, gee whiz, I better hide this really well. So the windshield went around the waist real quick to cover the phone up, but it's they're right onto that sort of stuff at Augusta. So I'm surprised that that person's been able to text through from Augusta, but great to have them listening. And then this one from Frank. Hi, guys. I was cooking and sent the fire alarm off. Can you please repeat the quaddie numbers again? Frank, be careful in the kitchen, but Rammer will do it for you because he cares.
Race 6, 6, 1, 5, 7. Race 7, 9, 1, 8, and 6. Race 8, 8, 2, 6, 7. And then finally, race 9, 7, 5, 8, 1, 2.
They are your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow. You can sharpen your pencils a bit more through tomorrow morning on the panel on RSN 927, but that gives you an early sighter. What about the formula bet, Dino? What's going on there this week?
The formula bet, Daniel, is for Peter Barron of Werribee. And for Peter, we are having $40 the win race, 2 number 1, dollar for dollar. $40 the win race, 6 number 6 through Irish Eyes. And $40 on the all up of the pair race, 2 number 1. Into race 6, number 6 for Peter Barron of Werribee.
21 into 66. Quinny, what's that come to for Pete?
I'll tell you what, plenty of value here. The all-up bet comes to 1870. That's yes. 340 by 550. So hopefully that can be a winning formula bet pre-multi.
Love it. Pre-multi. Everyone loves the pre-multi because he can sometimes get the unicorn five like my man Adam did through the week. 1870 for 21 into 66, 21 into 66 tomorrow for the formula bet. Let's get to the Kia Rama Ruffy.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. Fine-tuned for Australian conditions. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger today.
That's how it goes when it goes past you. It's a beauty, the Kia Stinger. It's what your car sounds like, Nick. Not quite Kia Stinger stuff, but it's not far off. Not far off. Dino, you mentioned before that perhaps you gave it away earlier. Can you just confirm the Rama Ruffy for this week, please?
Yes, it's race 7, number 9, Skelm. We are a little bit on weather watch, so just be a little bit circumspect there. But as long as the track's in the good to maybe just soft range, I'm happy to think he's a good each way chance. Race 7, number 9.
Race 7, number 9, Skelm. And those numbers again, Quinny?
Well, currently $16 in from 18 after Dino gave the tip out. So good to see the RSN family getting involved, and no doubt that will continue to firm up.
16 in from 18. By the end of the show, it'll be $10 or $11, I reckon, the way things are going. Well done. Well done. Race 7, number 9, the Rama Ruffy for this week. Dino, what's happening with Hamish a little bit later on?
We're going with the best seconds ever. Those that have had to run second to champions a lot. So a bit of an example of that sort of hay list running into Black Caviar and
yes,
maybe the shark at Augusta.
Why would you bring that to me?
The Masters Tournament app, Daniel. Have you discovered this?
It's the best app in the history of sport.
Ever. Ever. And watch Bryson DeChambeau. Just go back and watch the highlights of him on Five. It's good viewing.
It is fantastic viewing.
It is fantastic viewing, watching him hit a chip about 4 inches. And yeah, no, it's good.
It's the second best app in the history of the media because the RSN 97
the RSN
app
is the best.
The best one, of course, but it's coming a close second, don't you know?
Very close.
Great to have Brent Harvey with us, the AFL Games record holder from the North Melbourne Football Club. And from what we saw last Friday, really conscious of all the cameras around the grounds. Boomer, good morning to you.
What's all that about? I've got idea what you're talking about.
You're a social media sensation.
Mate,
phenomenon.
Because you did push-ups before the running.
For keeping oil. Fit. So I've been in here for about 4 minutes in studio, and I've been doing push-ups before I run
no
out.
No doubt.
I've had oil put
no
on
doubt.
Me.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah. You've got a top that's two sizes too small for you. I will give you one tip. The new running tops are very tight, and I have ordered a medium.
Rubbish.
People think it's an extra medium. Small. It's
an
extra small.
You've gone from kid size to medium.
Size 14 kids to a medium.
Joey's clothes.
It's an extra small. You're disgusting.
No, that is a lie. I don't know what to say, to be honest with you, Daniel, because you're just embarrassing now.
Well, don't be embarrassed, because you've got the best pipes in the business.
Pipes Harvey.
Well, Pipes Harvey is what we're going to call you from now on. You're not Boomer, you're Pipes. That's who you're going to be. Well, I've never known a runner to use oil, though. I mean, that's over the top as far as
Whitey, I'm back give me something, come on.
No, well, I will. I'm keen to talk about last night's game, but the goal kicking.
Yes.
Losing to Jono.
I know. No.
Now, we spoke to Jono about this yesterday. He actually felt sorry for you.
Yeah, so did I.
But you're meant to be happy when you raise money for children,
well,
particularly for the Royal Children's Hospital.
Well, five shots, $5,000 a kick, I think it was, $25,000. I kicked one, so I was disappointed because I was lost $20,000.
Was that meant to be a joyous occasion?
No, I know.
And you're devastated when Jono's getting interviewed.
Was there some concern about that at selection table last night at North Heidelberg because your kicking's off?
Jason Heatley, the senior coach, did say
who's
that you
one
might
of the
be
greatest
down back.
Shots for goal in the history of the
world.
Yeah,
absolutely is. He said that you might be starting down back this week and you would not be having shots on goal. Pass to your brother, he said to me.
Well, that's always a good idea. He doesn't miss too many.
Imagine Jason Heatley, the way the game's being played now. He'd probably get a game.
His shoulders are no good at the minute, he said.
Would he get a go for the Kangas, though, Boomer?
Who, Heatley?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he would, Daniel. I don't think we need to go down that track, do we?
Being nasty.
We had a bad week last week. We've had a couple of bad weeks, but we'll bounce back. We're a young, inexperienced team that... who we got this week? Adelaide. It'll be a great test for us. We'll see how we go in Melbourne at Marvel.
There's an opportunity if you can bounce back. Because it's about competitiveness, I imagine.
Yes, of course
David
it is.
Noble, and
yeah.
That didn't happen too much last week, which was disappointing, particularly in the second half of the game. Watching it up close, could you feel it just slipping and going, oh my God, we just cannot do anything about this? They're just not quite up to it at this stage?
Yeah, there was a pivotal moment in the game. If Nick Larkey actually, I think he kicked the goal and they brought it back and shaved the post or whatever it did. He kicks that. We're 5 points down with 3 or 4 minutes to go at the... at quarter time.
Yep.
And after that, after the quarter time, I think they took the ball full length of the ground, kicked the goal, and ended up being, I don't know, maybe 12 or 14 points or something at quarter time. After that, it did slip away, and then it did get a little bit concerning. They were competitive in areas, but non-competitive in other areas. And the coach is not happy with that. The players are certainly not happy with that. And we get another chance this week. That's the beauty about football. We get another chance this week to bounce back and show our fans that we are competitive. Last week was embarrassing for certain players. And they'll put their hand up and have a massive crack this week.
Were there forensic reviews and aggressive reviews on the back of that embarrassment?
Yeah, there was reviews. Not sure how deep they went into reviewing the game. It's hard to review games where you get beaten by 128 points.
So if you're talking about some players.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Yeah. They would have went to their line coaches. And in fact, they do go to their line coaches every single week and they would have seen some stuff that they didn't like. And most players will be put on notice. Like, if any team loses by 128 points, you're going to get put on notice. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back this week. We bounce back this week.
Just on the golf, before we get on to last night's game, you can give us a call, 1300 652 927. A few Essendon fans were needing some counselling earlier this morning.
Which I was okay with.
Justin Rose leads at 6 under.
6!
With a couple of holes to play. So importantly for Justin, not only is he 6 under, but he'll get out early tomorrow morning. So that's a significant statement made by Justin Rose, who has... does have a very good record at the Masters. Matsuyama and someone else who just got off the screen. Is it 3 under? I think it's Brian Harman, I think.
It is Brian Harman.
Yeah, and then a few at 2 under, a few at 1 under, and unfortunately Mark Leishman, who was leading at 4 under there early in his round, is at even par with one hole to play. Patrick Reed and Webb Simpson, two of the players, at 2 under. Last night, for those that missed the end of the game and fell asleep, which a couple did on the couch that I know, the Bombers fell short, agonisingly short. Sydney winning, making it 4 from 4. Essendon 1 from 4. What were your thoughts on the game?
My thoughts on the game was, I thought it was a great game. The intensity and everything was there early. I think Essendon got out to 25 points up, and I thought, wow, this is big. And I've been really impressed with Sydney, and I think everybody has, because they've been so defensive for so long. You add... Don Pike to their coaching panel, who's got an offensive mindset, and all of a sudden they're kicking massive scores and taking the ball full length of the ground with fantastic ball movement. So they might have been a bit stifled last night on the smaller SCG compared to what we've seen last night last week at the MCG. So we've always used that as an advantage for Sydney. Could it be a disadvantage now playing on that smaller ground?
Well, I think it's a good point, Boomer, but Sydney's record at home hasn't been flash for quite a while.
Yeah.
But I think as this sort of team evolves, even might even more be the case.
They're run and carry now. You look at the contrast between last week against Richmond at the MCG to this week against Essendon at the SCG. Now Essendon tackled their hearts out last night, but looking at Sydney and the way they were moving the ball last week against the best team in the competition was completely different to last night.
I've asked this question to all of you about Sydney the last couple of weeks, and I'll ask it again. Is it real? Is this sustainable for Sydney now, 4-0 with the Giants and the Suns to come, or is it still, are you still a little unsure?
No, I think it's real. I think it's real. I think they're going to have a some sort of peak, and because they're so young now as well. I mean, the first three kids have been... NAB Rising, or was it still NAB Rising Star? The Rising Star Award, he's been Sydney, Sydney and Sydney. So they've got abundance of these young kids. We know what happens sometimes throughout the season of young kids. It does fluctuate a little bit. So we might see a little bit of inconsistency, but you couple that with Parker and Kennedy and these type of guys who are fantastic leaders and have been for a long time, maybe they grab these kids and they don't have the fluctuation that we've seen in past of young teams. So I think it's real. I think it's real. I love the fact, and I know John Longmire's been a defensive type of coach. I love Don Pike's adding, or what he's adding to this football team, because again, notoriously, he's been that offensive coach. He's adding something that they've never had for a long time, and it looks like they're playing with so much more freedom. The ball movement last week against Richmond in particular was unbelievable. Again, stifled a little bit last night due to Essendon's pressure maybe, and maybe the small ground. But Whitey, I think it's absolute real.
Real?
As a preview to Monday and the changing of our top eight, Sydney will be coming into my top eight.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Agree.
They'll make the finals, so that's
real.
Right,
okay.
So that's real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm backing them in to get off to a good start and be able to get enough wins to get to the finals.
Historically, teams that kick, and there's quite a few examples of it that they go 4-zip, 5-zip unexpectedly, and they will have that down part through the middle part of the year. But because they've banked so many wins, as you were saying before, Rama, they now really only need to win 6 of their last 16 to be a chance.
Yeah, and they get the home games. I mean, it's always hard to go into state, so they're going to pinch a couple of, like the last night, if that was at Marvel, might have went the other way. But because it's at home, they just pinch that one or two extra ones, and there's their wins, and I totally agree, they make the finals.
Your conversation about being stifled, it was interesting just going through some of the numbers from last night and watching Essendon shut down that short-kicking game. Last week against Richmond, they had 117 uncontested marks.
Yep.
Last night, on a smaller venue albeit, but clearly with some homework being done by their opposition, they had 72. So that's 45 less. That's a lot. Yep. That's a lot less. So they tried to take something away from Sydney last night.
And they did clog the corridor. Yep. Sydney did have to go wide, which is not what they wanted to do in the previous three games. So I think Essendon had a pretty good night in the coaches' box.
Ideally, you want to keep a team to 20 marks a quarter, so 80 marks for the game. So that then allows you to apply that pressure, which Essendon were able to do last night. Nearly got over the line, but... But did it?
Now, there have been a lot of disappointed Essendon fans this morning, Boomer, that have given us a call. 1-300-652-927.
You have to say with a soft voice, counselling session.
That's right. Well, we've got to be careful because there were a few that are a little bit sort of, you know, down in the dumps.
Well, we know that. That's why we're counselling with our soft voice on.
Oh, I was quite optimistic about what I saw. What did you see from an Essendon perspective? Not just for now, but maybe also for the future.
I totally agree, and it's something I've actually written down to speak about. You lose Saad and Danaher, huge. Right out of any team. That's just like taking, who are we talking about? I don't know.
Lloyd and Franklin.
Lloyd and Franklin out of any team, right? Then you've got last night Ambrose, Caldwell, who I rate really, really highly. Draper, Hurley, Redmond, Scheel. You add them to the Essendon lineup. That makes a massive difference. And I agree with Rama that the pressure that they brought last night, they got coached really well. 25 points up, you're unlucky to not win it in the end. So I think the future's really bright. Some of those young kids, I didn't even know their names last night, were exceptional. I think they got Nick Cox. He's going to be a star of the competition. Not a good player. He's going to be an absolute star of the competition. You don't want to hang your hat on one player, but he's going to be around for a long, long time, and he's going to play in multiple positions.
I thought it was interesting last night, Rama, that Nick Cox, in his fourth game as a supposed wingman, pretty much rucked most of the second half of the last quarter with a game in the balance and wasn't too bad.
And was getting in defence and was running forward.
I didn't like seeing
him. You don't like it?
I didn't like seeing him in the ruck.
Oh, no, Ben Rutten's on notice.
No. Just look, he's 200 centimetres, I get that. But what is he, 85 kilo maybe? And going against Tom Hickey, obviously an experienced ruckman, I don't know if a fourth gamer needs to be in the ruck. I get the situation of the game and all that sort of stuff, but I would have hated to have seen Nick get injured through a collision or something happening in the ruck. Like, you see him in the end of the first quarter, was it, when he kicked that running goal on his left foot from 45 metres out?
Has got one of the greatest opposites I've ever seen in a young boy.
He's a Leon Cameron type.
Oh,
very nice.
So good on both sides.
But I just think you've got that type of player. Now, like I said, I understand the situation of the game, but...
So who was Essendon's ruckman?
Peter Wright.
How was Peter Wright going last night?
I don't know where he was. In the late part of the game, might have been on the bench.
So if you, but as a coach, Rama, and I know you're worried about a young kid going.
Yeah,
to
that's
the
all I'm saying.
They're in the game to win it. You've got to do something, don't you?
So 40 games into his career, no dramas, because he's got a bit more weight on his body and can handle the knocks and the bumps. But 4 games in,
he looked a little bit hesitant in the ruck, not scared by any stretch of imagination, but that contact, I think he was doing the old fake Peter Fakos jump, and then Peter Fakos jump and try to read him as a ruck rover rather than a ruckman. So I actually like his little ploy.
That's a new football word.
Peter Fakos. I've never heard that. That's good. 22 hitouts for Peter Wright last night in his battle with Tom Hickey. Sam Reed got involved a little bit as well. Nick Cox, as you said. Tom Hickey was 27 hit-outs. Now, Peter Wright's not a natural ruckman. Well, he's being forced to fill a hole at the moment.
Exactly right.
He's a pincher. He's not number one man.
Well, they've got another young ruckman at the club, Nick Bryant. Now, he, again, he's going to be a good player, but there's no weight on his body yet. So.
And Phillips is...
injured.
Yeah.
Bad luck, Bombers. Not to be.
Yeah, very close. I thought they put up a great show.
It was a great fight.
You say that with great sympathy.
It was a good performance. I have little expectation for the Bombers, so I was impressed, I must admit. We're different to some of our callers earlier this morning who are thinking about just throwing the membership in the microwave.
Well, they've actually been in games, though, haven't they? Who did they play last week?
St Kilda.
And they would
Port Adadelaide before that.
Port Adadelaide.
But they'll win another game. Hawthorn. They'll up by 40 points as well. So they've been in games. They could be
3-1.
They could be 3-1, absolutely. Yeah, but they're not, Rammer. They're 1-3.
What are they again? Remember, what are they?
They're 1-3.
Listen to this. North Melbourne one side, Hawthorn the other side.
How do you win?
1-300-652-927. The Swans are a real deal. We'll throw it out there for our listeners. Three rising stars already. 4-0 start to the season for the first time since 2012, which was a premiership year, if you don't mind. Let's have a listen to the coaches from last night. Ben Rutten, who is under great pressure after Adam Ramanaskis put him on notice.
he was talking after
the game. Let's have a listen to Ruts.
Proud of the group is certainly the way I'm feeling. We're certainly disappointed and the players are shattered about the result. We're certainly here to win and, you know, disappointed about that. But the character, the grit, the determination the guys showed right to the last second, you know, on a short break, travel, all those things are character building for our group. But, yeah, disappointed on the result, I think.
So that's Ben Rutten. I did see some footage on Fox Footy last night post-game where they were into the rooms of the Bombers and Dyson Heppel
was
speaking in front of the group. He was commanding the room. There was people in suits as well, so some of the board members maybe and some of the high-profile supporters of the Bombers who were in the rooms last night. He was quite animated and quite body language was very strong. I don't know clearly what was said, but he looked like he was less than happy with what the outcome had been for that game. And maybe there were some incidents late in the game or things that they didn't do, Rammer, that didn't sit comfortably with the skipper. And he let him know last night.
Well, that's strong leadership.
Which is good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I think it's needed.
And for those that have already called in this morning who are Essendon fans, I think, as I was saying before, this is the sort of stuff fans want to see.
Yep.
And I think fans demand of this football team, and that is that discipline, competitiveness, consistency, resilience, and strong leadership from not only the coach, but from the captain to say that, you know, okay, it's competitive performance, but these are the things, if we had done them better in the final 5 minutes, we might have a different result.
I think
they'd be comfortable with getting
close. I think
Dyson
in the past has been criticised for not being strong enough. So I really, really like that. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall and to hear what he said, but his eyes, they were firmly fixed on him, all players.
I'd like Essendon to share, to a point, the tone of that. Because
I don't think they will.
No, I'm not saying they will, but I would be interested to know what was said.
Of course you would. Everybody would be interested to know what he said.
Those
sort of things were why he'd need to stay within the football club. There's board members, I think you said, were in there.
Some suits.
Stuff like that. And
so I'll probably get leaked then.
You'll hear about it tomorrow.
Bad luck to the Bombers. That's a real shame. John Longmire is the coach of the Swans. He was victorious. Let's have a listen to the winner after the game last night.
Look, I think first and... you know, they had 36 tackles in the last quarter. Their pressure rating in that last quarter was through the roof. You know, to their credit, they were pretty good. You know, we certainly didn't kick very straight, which hurt us a little bit on the scoreboard. But, you know, when a team comes in and has 36 tackles in the last quarter, you've got to do a lot right to win when it was so close at three-quarter time. So to withstand that and be able to do the things that we needed to do, whether it was run or whatever, and find a way, was a really good sign.
John Longmire there, the coach of the Sydney Swans. Big Bud kicked three to bring up 950 career total goals. Let's have a listen to the Bud. I think he's got some access to him after the game as well.
Not really was, but they played some pretty good football this year. We knew they were going to come out and have a good crack, and they certainly really stepped it up tonight. Look, Brian, grinding games out is really good. I think it's really a positive
thing. We've got such a young team, but to find a way through that and then win, it's a good sign. It's always good winning. It's obviously been we've struggled the last 2 years, but no doubt we've blooded a lot of young kids, and I think it's so exciting, obviously being one of the older boys at the footy club now. It's always good to see young kids come in and bring that excitement, and I'm loving it out here. That was always the plan. It was play one, miss one, and then away we go from now, which will be good.
Away we go indeed, the Big Bud. They have really loud music in the background there, and they need a microphone closer to the Big Bud after the game.
Social distancing. Have you seen that with the social distancing where the Channel 7, they have the microphone on the crane, and then the interview happens, and they shake hands and sort of pat on the back, give a bit of a hug, and then walk away?
It's fantastic. It makes perfect sense.
All for the camera.
Franklin talks about those young kids, McInerney, Warner, Dawson, Florent, Wicks, Goulden, Campbell, McDonald, Blakey, Bell. They're good names.
They're good players.
A bit of a story about McInerney. He's an amazing story because in his year 12 year at Marsland College in the AGS, he couldn't get a game in their first 18 team. Yes. And he only got a game late in the year because of injuries to others. Roll the clock forward a couple of years and he looks like a bona fide 200 game midfielder.
Good player, good person, of course. Where's he from, Daniel?
Oh, the mighty Northern Knights, the factory another one from the factory. Sick of your players not producing any players.
Just on Buddy, it's going to be interesting now to see how they use him going forward. Whether he travels to the long travel to Perth, etc. Whether he backs up, plays two in a row, three in a row.
He's got 9 day, then 3 7 days. So they reckon he'll play the next month.
Yep. It'll be sort of four on one off.
Yeah,
I think moving forward now.
That's about right.
Play a month, have a week off.
And the thing with him is he looks like he's dropped a lot of weight.
He looks
moving extremely well. He's still a power athlete, but the way he was jumping into packs, the way he was able to be part of the contest when it mattered most, would have to give
Franklin
him a lot of confidence.
Will be so important for Logan McDonald. Just
correct.
Takes Agreed. The pressure off him. Just a couple of years. We all know and think McDonald's going to be a really good key forward in the competition, but the ball doesn't need to go to him all the time, and then he gets smacked in the back of the head. When a young key forward gets smacked around a lot, it just sucks the confidence out of him a lot.
Well, if Buddy wasn't there, the number one defender probably goes to
him, and it's Sam Reed is the other.
So there you go. So then he doesn't get the experience of watching Buddy number one, but getting the second best defender and actually being able to work a little bit harder. That's similar to what happened, unfortunately, to North Melbourne at the minute with Nick Larkey taking the number one defender. If we still had a Ben Brown type of player, that Larkey would probably blossom into a better player quicker. Yep. But now he's got to take the brunt of being the number one forward. And the ball hasn't been coming in. I know we're not about the Kangas, but the ball hasn't been coming in great to Larkey, so we can use that a bit of an excuse. But that's what I'm sort of trying to get at.
Justin Rose has made another birdie.
He's 7 under.
To go to 7 under. And I think he's 5 under for the back nine with one to play.
I'll say it right here, right now. Unlosable situation. He can't lose it.
Well, clearly he can because it's Justin Rose.
There's been some incidents on Monday.
No, he can't lose it.
In here.
He'll win. Just get on.
Well, I will.
A bit of vomit all over himself. there's been a lot of incidents on Monday morning in here.
Well, historically, when you start well at the Masters, it's one of those courses that you tend to stay near the top.
Exactly right.
Have a look at that big puddle in front of him. I would go straight in there.
Well, that's on 16 for, who was that? Was that Bryson? No.
No.
Somebody else. Justin, 7 under through 17. That's a big result. He's four, leads by four. That's the thing. Four's not easy to make up. Although Sunday.
No, but that course, guys that start well, they're there on Sunday.
I'm telling you, he can't lose. The jacket will be his on Monday morning when we'll be there watching it as it happens next Monday morning after the weekend's golfing activity. Off the SMS, is the famous form ladder making a return in 2021?
Oh,
well, of course it is. Well, the fans want it, and it's an investment tool is what it is, and that's what it's been for the last couple of years. But we don't do it before we get a sample size of 4 weeks. So it's at the end of the weekend, there will be a form ladder.
My opinion on the form ladder is if the people want it, we then need to let the people see it.
No, it's my
IP. It's like KFC.
Secret Herbs and Spices.
Herbs and Spices.
Spot on, Whitey.
Well, that's not good enough.
No, I think it is.
Well, you spruik this form ladder.
We don't need to know hows and whys. It's just about what
people do. Clearly they do if they're texting in about this.
They need to know the outcomes. That's all they need to know.
Oh, well.
Don't.
No formulas.
Don't be.
He just makes it up on the run. That's the form letter.
Don't be starting on that, mate. It's a system where no one needs to know, except for me. But it'll be back after next week. Now, it's only really valuable to us as an investment tool in the back half of the season. But after 4 weeks, we have a sample size, so we'll get it done for you next week. Promise. It's going as well as the spreadsheet, the early mail spreadsheet. What else? The injury to Isaac Heaney, Boom, I want to ask you about that and the impact that might have on the Swans. Broken hand to be out for, what is it, six-ish?
Well, Boomer will know because he broke his hand whacking a couple of blokes. So what? He'll know exactly how many
Mark
weeks.
Mark Johnson headbutted my fist. I'm telling you, in 99, he headbutted my fist. And now I
how
did
many
break
weeks
my hand,
did you miss?
I actually only missed a couple of weeks. It was leading into, it was pretty late in the season. It was, I reckon I missed two, but I went and had the operation and got a plate put in and then just wore a little cast over the plate with a glove on. You can come back from hands because they heal. If you get them done well, you can come back pretty quickly because you do need them, clearly. But what I'm trying to get at, the surgeons do it properly with a plate and everything like that, and you can come back pretty quickly. But it's so early in the season, you probably don't want to risk it.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.